from KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Those big swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauley on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go.
Let's go.
On a Friday evening, we welcome you in. It is time for another Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley. Great to have you with us this evening as we get you set for a sports weekend. We got lots to talk about today. A couple guests going to be with us in less than 10 minutes. We're going to be joined by Natalie Jones, a St. Louisan, grew up in St. Louis, now lives in Columbia, working as the sports director at ABC 17. We'll preview Missouri football with her coming up in just a few moments or so. And then also we are going to talk with our guy Kevin Wheeler next hour. We'll talk all things baseball with him. Certainly a few other things that we want to get into as well. Want to start just real quick talking about the Blues, and we'll run some audio from Drew Bannister coming up next hour because he spoke today. But I think pretty much the biggest sports story coming out of the city today is the fact that coming off a loss yesterday, the Utah Hockey Club, where the Blues did not play especially well, the line changes are happening again. That has been a very consistent thing. But not only a line change, but one of the top players that is still available in Pavel Buchnevich, who has been your second-line center, well, he is being moved back to his natural position, at least temporarily, of moving up to the top line, and he's going to be a winger as opposed to being a center. So the top line, and we saw this a little bit in the third period yesterday, and we've seen this group at other times, or specifically we've seen Buchnevich and Kyrou on wings with Robert Thomas when Thomas was available in certain situations. But the top line for tomorrow's game is going to be Braden Schenn centering Pavel Buchnevich and Jordan Kyrou as Dylan Holloway moves up to the second line center, and Oscar Sundquist is going to be the third line center, it would appear. It's and Drew Bannister evidently gave it to his team pretty good at times during practice today, coming off a disappointing performance yesterday. Right now, this is a team that is going to do its best to really tread water during this time period where they don't have Robert Thomas, where they don't have Broberg available. But it just, in many ways, it doesn't feel like this team has taken the step forward that you would have liked them to take. Now, look, it's still really early. It's still really, really early. And they've had some really good moments, too. Like, I'm not trying to be unfair about this. The fact that they did win four of their first six games. They had a couple really good comeback wins in there. They've certainly put it together on some nights. Those two wins that they've had recently against Toronto, 5-1 and 4-2, those were really good wins. When they knocked off Tampa Bay, they still won two of their last three because they'd won back-to-back games before losing yesterday. That win against Tampa, there was a lot of really good things out of that. And they don't have to be world beaters right now. If they go through this 6 weeks to 2 months of without Thomas and Broberg and they play about 500 hockey, they're going to be in a spot where they've still got an opportunity to make a run for a playoff spot. But it's just, I just want to see some consistency. And I don't, look, I sometimes I'm critical, not critical, critical is the wrong word. Sometimes I bring attention to the fact that when we're talking about baseball, and I hear from listeners and I hear from fans complaining about certain aspects of the Cardinals, and that specific aspect is something that's happening baseball-wide, I'll make the comment, and again, I'm not being critical, I'm just stating a fact, I'll make the point that, you know, baseball is a sport where a lot of people really kind of just pay attention to their team and they don't pay attention to a lot of what's going on. So a lot of times you complain about something going on with the Cardinals, and really it's something that's just going on across all of baseball. Not that the complaint isn't valid, but it is important context to know that that's not a Cardinal issue, that's a baseball issue. So maybe I don't do as good of a job as I should on paying attention to everything else that's going on in the NHL. If we're look, there's probably a lot of teams that have a hard time finding consistency. A lot of teams that can look really good one night and not so good the next. A lot of teams that put together a really good week and follow that up with a not so good week. That's probably a very common, very standard thing across the NHL, especially for teams that are not really, really good and teams that are not really, really bad. If you're kind of in the middle, which is where the Blues are, that's just going to be part of the DNA. All that being said, that's my really long disclaimer to simply say, I really wish that we could just see a little bit more consistency from the Blues. That's the challenging thing about this team when you are trying to evaluate them, when you're trying to talk to them, talk about them, when you're trying to figure out what trend they're going towards, whether they're going in an upward direction or a downward direction, and it's just kind of random. That's what this Blues season has been this year, and that's what the Blues season was last year, and that's what the Blues season was in many ways the year before that as well. So that's the challenge. Now, also, it should be noted, this team should be better than the team last year. This team should be better than who they were last year. On paper, they are better. But on paper right now, they're not better in the sense that the guys that make them better aren't there when you're playing without Robert Thomas and without Philip Roberg. We will circle back to the Blues coming up later on in the show. We'll also later on this hour, I want to go through MLB Trade Rumors put together their list of the top 35 trade candidates for the Major League Baseball offseason. And there are a lot of Cardinals on this list. We're going to go through the Cardinals that are listed and evaluate the chances are that they would get traded. We're going to do that at about 6:35, 6:40. But up next, we're going to be joined by Natalie Jones. She covers Missouri for ABC 17. She doesn't cover them for ABC 17. She's the sports director at ABC 17 in Columbia. She joins us next. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Very happy to welcome on to the program. She is the sports director at ABC 17 in Columbia and mid-Missouri. She is a St. Louisan. She is Natalie Jones. You follow her on Twitter at NatalieABC17. She spells Natalie, N-A-T-H-A-L-I-E. Natalie, thanks so much for taking some time with us. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to some Mizzou football.
Yeah, absolutely. So they've got a big one coming up on Saturday as they're going to match up against Oklahoma. And yeah, from a record standpoint, Mizzou's in a good spot. From a performance standpoint, they're not in as good of a spot as many people would like them to be. Can you just talk about the bigness of this game? Because it feels like if they really want to turn this into a special season, a 9-10 win season, this is a borderline must-win game.
Well, I definitely agree with you. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I think they have to win this game, especially when you look at the rest of the schedule down the road here. You have South Carolina, Mississippi State, you know, obviously not having a good season, but it's always a tough place to play when you go down to Starkville. And then you end the season with Arkansas. That's always a very tough game. So in order to kind of get to the standard, I guess, they set in that Cotton Bowl season last year, Oklahoma feels like a must win, especially this Oklahoma team that has really struggled since they've gotten into the SEC. And if you look on the flip side of this, I think it's just a big game on both ends. You know, the Sooners are still looking to become bowl eligible this season, and the last two games on their schedule are Alabama and LSU, so it's really looking like the Tigers are their biggest chance to kind of get that bowl eligibility in their first Southeastern Conference season. So I think a big game on all ends. I mean, Eli Drinkwitz needs to see some better performances out of his teams in these big games. You know, you see them on the big stage when you look at Texas A&M, when you look at Alabama, and just really underperformed. And obviously, you know, they've been dealing with some injuries lately, but I think you hit the nail on the head there. This is probably one of the biggest ones they've gone into this season. Maybe not the one people expected to be the biggest one this season, but it's turned out to be that way.
It's interesting. Missouri is 6-2. They're in the top 25 in the college football playoff rankings. They're playing at home. Oklahoma is a 5-win team, a 1-win team in the SEC. They fired their offensive coordinator. They've bounced between quarterbacks this year. And I realize the availability of Missouri's quarterback, and we'll get to that in a moment, is a little bit up in the air for themselves. But are you at all surprised that Oklahoma comes into this game as a favorite?
I mean, a little bit. You know, I think, like you kind of mentioned, a lot of it has to do with Missouri's availability, and I think that kind of has, you know, impacted the way teams and the nation's kind of seeing them this season. Obviously, this team looks a lot different when Brady Cook isn't back there, especially you see Nate Noel and Mookie Cooper, and you've been dealing with injuries all around. So I think that's really affected how people have seen this team, and a lot of that, you know, them not being favorites might contribute to the fact that people don't know if they're going to see Brady Cook out there on Saturday. And obviously, if you get Drew Pine out there, games have not been going Missouri's way. We'll just put it pretty bluntly, right, when you see Drew Pine go out on the field. So it is a bit surprising. If you would have told me at the beginning of the season when you see, you know, the start that Oklahoma's had, especially in their first SEC year, that Mizzou would not come into this game favored, I probably wouldn't have believed you. But with how things have been going in the last few weeks, a lot of ups and downs, I guess I wouldn't say I'm so surprised.
Brady Cook is officially listed as questionable. What's your gut feeling on this? Are we going to see him? How compromised will he be if he is in there? Just kind of where are you at right now with what you think it's going to look like for Cook potentially?
You know, I've had a lot of questions about this. Obviously, that's the question, the million-dollar question everyone wants to know. I don't have a great feeling. That's just purely based off of my gut instinct. It's nothing that I've heard. But, you know, obviously we haven't been in practice for 2 weeks now, and I think they really wanted to limit the speculation. We usually go to practice every Tuesday and get to see these guys work. This is the second, you know, Tuesday in a row that was open that we weren't able to go to practice and see them work out, right? He did go into the Alabama game doubtful and did end up playing, right? And I think Brady Cook is the type of guy you're going to have to tell him he's not playing. He's going to go out on the field if there's any way possible. They might be getting to a point where is it worth it to have him go out there and really, really injure himself? You know, he did play against Alabama, didn't injure his ankle, but then ended up injuring his wrist. So, you know, how much do you want to pile on top of this kid of getting more and more injuries if he's not at full strength? So it's kind of a question of I think he can play. He probably would go out there. You saw him do it in the Auburn game. But should he play? That's kind of the question we're getting to.
And look, a compromised Brady Cook is, from what we've seen, a compromised Brady Cook probably gives you more than what you've gotten so far with Drew Pine. I mean, that's part of the equation too here. I think you're right about just figuring out whether or not it's the safe thing to do with an injury. But is there maybe a little bit more leeway in looking to play him injured just because of the difference between him and the guy who's been playing behind him?
Well, and I think that's why this is a conversation. You know what I mean? I think in a lot of cases, if you had a really, really solid backup quarterback that you have a lot of trust in, and he's kind of proven himself in those situations, I don't know if this is the conversation we'd be having. I don't think a team would risk their starting quarterback like this. But Drew Pine, I mean, it's just straight up. He's had a lot of struggles when he hit the field. He can't get this offense going. He's a much different quarterback than Brady Cook, obviously. And I think they call a lot of the same plays that they do for Brady Cook. You know, he's not as much of a runner. He's more of a pocket passer. And he's not going to be able to be as mobile as Brady Cook is. And I think this offense is so built around the abilities that Brady has that it's been hard for Drew to really fit in there. So I do think that's why this is a conversation. Drew is very much so, you know, underperformed from what we heard about him in the offseason. But yeah, I mean, I think that's why Eli Drinkwitz is probably considering playing even a hurt Brady Cook over Drew Pine just to give them a chance.
We're talking with Natalie Jones from ABC 17 in Columbia. They probably have a very good idea if Brady Cook's not going to play or not. Talk about Coach Drinkwitz and the rest of the coaching staff. And they've probably had a fairly good idea most of the week. If it ends up being that he's not in there, is it safe to say that they've hopefully used this week as an opportunity to maybe change the offense up a little bit and give Pine more of an opportunity to have success?
Well, you know, we did talk to the team on Tuesday, and obviously they weren't going to tell us if Brady was playing or not, but they did mention, you know, that they have been getting some reps in with Drew Pine. You know, we talked to Theo Weiss. He said that that's been going good. Mitch Walters on the offensive line, he said, you know, working with Drew has been good. And I think Drew's always been a really good leader on the field. Things just haven't been going his way. You know, he's a very vocal guy. I think if I had to guess, they're probably getting him in a lot this week. And that's kind of what the sounds of it were in the press conference. Obviously, Drinkwitz said that they hadn't made a decision on who was going to start, but it was interesting to me that they did kind of make it known that, yes, Drew has been, you know, getting first team reps. Those are guys he hasn't really worked with a lot. So getting reps with Luther Burden, getting reps with Theo Weiss, you know, hopefully we see Mookie Cooper out there. I do think Nate Noel, that's going to be a big guy if they can have him back in the football game. Give a little bit of relief to Drew Pine, right? Kind of get that run game going. I think that's going to be the biggest key is, you know, if Drew Pine is out there, he struggled so much in the passing game so far this season. If we can get that run game going, that'll be the biggest key to the game, I think.
Since we have you, just real quickly before we let you go, Mizzou basketball, they opened up the season on Monday, had a lead against Memphis, couldn't hold on, end up losing 83-75. They play tonight against Howard. They've got a lot of winnable games here coming up on the non-conference schedule moving forward. Tiny, tiny, tiny sample size. You can't learn much from the first game and even the exhibition game that was in there. But does it seem different from what you've seen this year compared to what was a very disappointing season last year?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people were asking me, you know, like, oh, no, should we buckle up? Is this going to be another season where, you know, 0-18 in conference play? I really don't think so. I know that Memphis game looked a lot like last year's Memphis game, right? You have a fantastic first half, then you get into the second half and really just lose it all. But I do think there's a lot more talent on this team. I think they just kind of need to build that chemistry. You know, it's the age of the transfer portal. These guys have not played together. You need a lot more from Mark Mitchell, but he has a lot of talent, and I think he's kind of still finding himself. That was his big goal coming to Mizzou, right? He wanted to get back to playing like himself. I think it's going to take a little bit to get there. The one thing that I like, you look at the younger guys. I mean, Trent Pierce and Anthony Robinson had a heck of a game, you know, those two sophomores. So I think you're going to see them grow a lot this season. They're going to get more vocal. I think this team has a lot more natural ability, and for that reason, I don't think we're going to be getting into a 2023-24 Tiger situation.
Natalie Jones is the sports director, ABC 17 in Columbia. Mentioned you're St. Louis born and raised. This is our first time talking and having you on, so I got to ask you the St. Louis question. What's your high school before we let you go?
I went to Corriezu. Go Chargers.
All right. Very, very good. Natalie, thank you so much for the time. Encourage folks to follow you on Twitter at NatalieABC 17, and hopefully we can check in again with you down the line.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's Natalie Jones joining us on the program. We appreciate her taking some time with us again, St. Louis, and working as the sports director for ABC 17 in Columbia. We'll take a break, come back, have more coming up. We'll jump back into the Cardinals. Want to go through the potential trade candidates on the roster still moving forward. There's been a lot of talk about Nolan Arenado, now Wilson Contreras, kind of off that list. Who else could be on that list of players that get moved? We'll discuss that in just a moment. This is Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Of our Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Great to have you with us today as we continue on through 8 o'clock. We've got the Gas House Gang tonight at 8 o'clock. It's going to be Kevin Wheeler and Bernie Miklas. They're going to talk a lot of baseball. Real quickly, something that is coming down here just recently, and so this makes some of what we talked about with Natalie Jones in our last segment. We talked through the scenarios of Brady Cook not playing. According to a report from Power Mizzou that just came out, Mizzou is going to not have Cook tomorrow, so that means Drew Pine would be the starting quarterback, so that seems to be the indications as of now. This is something that I've been wanting to talk about for a few days. We didn't have shows on Monday or Tuesday, and then we only had a half hour yesterday, so I didn't have time to get into this. MLB Trade Rumors, which is a website, they did their annual list of top trade candidates, and they listed the top 35 trade candidates of the Major League Baseball offseason. The Cardinals have 7 of the 35. So 20% of the 35 top trade candidates across Major League Baseball come from the Cardinals. Now, we can remove one of those based off the events that happened this week. So, and this was published before we learned that Wilson Contreras was not really going to trade, waive his no trade clause, and he was okay going over to first base, and all indications are he's going to be the first base moving forward. So he is on this list, but even if we remove him, it's still 6 of 35, which is a lot. Want to go through the players on this list, and I'll give you my take on whether or not I think they're going to get traded. I also think it's very notable. I thought in some ways John Mozeliak's tone changed with what he had to say at the GM meetings this past week. Now, to be completely fair on that, I wasn't at the GM meetings. I wasn't hearing him talk. I wasn't seeing the nonverbal cues and things like that. What I was going off of previously was what he said in the news conference towards the end of the season when they announced Chaim Bloom, and then when they did the Rob Serfolio news conference on Zoom. Those were the two times that we had spoken with Mo, and based off those two media availabilities, especially the second one, which was the Zoom call, I really thought that we were heading towards a major dismantling from a payroll standpoint. That not only was it going to be allowing Paul Goldschmidt to walk in free agency and not offering contracts and picking up options of a Kyle Gibson and a Lance Lynn, but I thought it was going to be a lot more than that, where maybe it was going to be multiple players of the group of Contreras and Gray and Arenado. And for sure, they were going to move on from Mats and Michaelis, even if they had to eat some salary on those guys. I'm backing off that now. It really felt like listening, just reading. I keep saying listening. I didn't listen. I read the quotes that were attributed to him through reporting from Derek Gould of the Post-Dispatch and Katie Wu of The Athletic. But reading what I read, it felt like the tone had changed a little bit, that they've already done a lot of the heavy lifting when it comes to the payroll reduction. And they have already reduced a lot of payroll. Now, that doesn't mean they're not going to do a little bit more, and I still think it is likely that Nolan Arenado gets moved. But I'm not sure how much more it's going to be than that. In fact, one report had indicated, I can't remember if this was from Derek Gould's piece or Katie Wu's piece, one report had indicated that indications are that unless they are just absolutely blown away, that they are going to keep Ryan Helsley. And Helsley is the guy that I think most of us thought that was maybe the best trade candidate, because he was the guy who's going to get you the most back. And in a year where you're not expecting to compete at a high level, and with Helsley being a guy that you are unlikely to sign after this upcoming season, he is somebody that would make sense to trade just because you can pay off some dividends moving forward. Right now, indications are that he might not be on the move. So, without further ado, let's get to the Cardinals, who are on the MLB trade rumors list, and I'll give you my thoughts. And the top player on the list in terms of Cardinals, number two overall, the top guy overall is Garrett Crochet of the White Sox, who is likely to get traded. Second on that list is who we just talked about with Ryan Helsley. He is arbitration eligible this year. He has a projected salary of around $7 million for this upcoming season, which is a good hefty raise for him, but at the same time, that's a pretty good value when you're talking about a high-end closer, a top three, top four closer in all of Major League Baseball. And I think specifically, if you look to the World Series, how much would have the Dodgers and the Yankees absolutely loved to have had a Ryan Helsley on their roster? If there was one area where I felt like each of those teams got exposed, and the Yankees got exposed in a few areas, but if there's one area where they got exposed, look, they were both, neither group had a really good bullpen performance. And if you want to make a run in the playoffs where starting pitching doesn't go deep into games, you want to have a bunch of guys. So if you're a team that wants to win a World Series and you've got an opportunity to go at a Ryan Helsley, I think you learned in the playoffs this year, and you learn in the playoffs every year, that having more guys like that available is a really, really good thing to have. And it's not out of the realm of possibility for a team to go get a high-end closer and have a pretty good closer that they move out of the closer's role. We saw that this year with the Astros. The Astros went and got Josh Hader. Presley did a perfectly fine job for the Astros, you know, 2 years ago. He lost his closer's job, not because of anything he did or didn't do, but because the Astros felt like they had an opportunity to improve themselves with Josh Hader. And Presley's a guy who's could get moved as well this offseason. So Ryan Helsley, number one on the list in terms of Cardinals, number two overall. I still think that he is likely to get moved. It makes sense. When the reports are that the Cardinals don't plan on moving Ryan Helsley unless they're blown away by an offer, they're going to get blown away by an offer. They have to get blown away by an offer. There is no way that teams out the opportunity to go out and acquire a Ryan Helsley that at under $7 million per year potentially, that just doesn't exist very often. So if your teams across baseball that want to shore up the back end of your bullpen, yeah, you're gonna be willing to part with some pretty good prospects and young players, and maybe some major league ready young players to go get a Ryan Helsley. So I still think it is likely that Helsley gets moved, but it is worth noting in this conversation that the narrative around that has changed a little bit. Number two on this list from the Cardinals, number three overall, I thought this was interesting, was Eric Fetty, a guy that the Cardinals went out and got. You know, I would not be completely opposed. Generally speaking, I like the idea of the Cardinals going into the season with a rotation that has Sonny Gray and Eric Fetty at the top, and then Andre Pallante, and then you fill in with some young guys after that. So I don't mention Miles Michaelis. I don't mention Steven Matz. They're still under contract. In fact, I think I'm thinking it is more and more likely that Miles Michaelis is going to be on the team come next year. But I'm not including him in this conversation right now, just when I say what I would like to see for next year. But again, this is a situation where his salary at $7.5 million, that's a value. That is a big-time value. And if you're a team out there that can't play in deep waters when it comes to going out and signing the top-level free agent starting pitching that's out there, if you're not going to even make a phone call to Corbin Burns because you know you don't have the money for him, well, if you can go trade for an Eric Fetty, where that's going to add $7.5 million to your payroll, that's another guy who might have pretty good value and maybe even more value now than what he had at the trade deadline when you look at what the Cardinals gave up for him. That's nothing against Tommy Edman. I just think you can get more for Eric Fetty. And so if there's that opportunity out there, not that I'm looking to see him get moved, but if there's an opportunity, and all the reporting indicates that the Cardinals are going to stay in contact with Kyle Gibson. So if you trade away Eric Fetty, but then you can go use that $7.5 million that you had earmarked for Fetty and get Gibson to come back on that kind of deal, I think Fetty's better than Gibson, but it's not that much of a drop-off going from Fetty to Gibson. So I think that maybe is part of when the Cardinals say that they are going to stay in contact with Gibson and he's somebody that there might be some interest in having a reunion with, to me, that has to be connected to some other moves. And maybe an Eric Fetty moving on, if you get out from under both Miles Michaelis and Steven Matz, there's an opportunity for Gibson to come back in. But as the rotation is set right now and the guys who are on the roster right now, that just doesn't really exist. All right, we will continue to go through this list. If you have any thoughts on it, you can text in. If you're listening to the Dave Glover Show today, they talked about it. We're in a different studio. They're redoing our board in our main studio. We're not doing phone calls today. There's just a lot going on here. So we'll let you text in if you got any thoughts. 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. Or you can tweet at me at Matt Pauley on air. MattPauley on air. We'll continue to go through the Cardinals trade candidates for this offseason. That's up next as we roll on with the Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We are back at it as we roll on with a Gray Bar Sports Open Line. If you want to chime in on what we are talking about, you can do so texting or tweeting. If you text in, it's 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900, or tweet at me at Matt Pauley on air. This conversation may extend to our first segment of the 7 o'clock hour coming out of the 7 o'clock news. We are evaluating MLB trade rumors and their top 35 players that are most tradable, most likely to be traded this offseason. And of the 35 players, 7 of them, so 20%, are Cardinals. 6 of them are players that could potentially get moved. I think it's a safe bet now that Wilson Contreras, who we'll get to in a moment, will not be traded. All right, so the top Cardinal on this list, number 2 overall, was Ryan Helsley. Number 3 on the list overall, number 2 for the Cardinals, was Eric Fetty. Next on the list, going down to number 10 on the overall list, number 3 for the Cardinals, another guy who I do think is likely to be moved, and that would be third baseman Nolan Arenado. So the Arenado situation is complicated. I am more convinced that he'll be traded now than I was this time last week before we learned the news about Wilson Contreras going over to first. If you're the Cardinals and you are going to continue to stress about how there's going to be so many more opportunities for younger players, then there has to be more opportunities for younger players. And when Contreras is at first and you look at an outfield group that you kind of have an idea of what that's going to look like, especially in the corner spots with Walker and Nootbaar, and then in all likelihood the center field spot is going to be some sort of combination of Scott and Ciani, depending on what happens in spring training. That leaves some infield spots, and to me, second, third are very connected to each other with something else that's kind of looming in the background, and that's the fact that J.J. Weatherholt's going to be here before you know it. Weatherholt has a very good chance of making his major league debut this upcoming season. And once he arrives, he, in all likelihood, becomes the Cardinals' second baseman moving forward. I guess if they wanted to look at him at third, they could potentially do that, but nobody's talked about that. So we'll go under the idea that he's eventually going to get to second. So that basically leaves third. For much of the season, second and third, and then eventually just third. And you got a bunch of guys. There's still belief in Nolan Gorman. He still has the opportunity to be a 30-home run guy. And you want the Cardinals... You know, there's a lot of people out there that are complaining a lot about the fact that Nolan Gorman is still in the organization. They would love to see Gorman get traded. Well, let's run this scenario by you. Let's say Nolan Gorman gets traded and another organization unlocks him. He becomes a consistent 30 home run guy. He still strikes out, you know, one time a game, though, one to one and a half times a game. Like you can live with that. He becomes that guy. What does that mean? What does that all of a sudden become? He just becomes another former Cardinal who goes on to perform at a high level for another team. If the Cardinals are redoing so many things in the organization, they've brought in a new hitting coach. They're going to bring in other really smart people. Don't you want somebody as talented as Nolan Gorman to at least be given the opportunity for the Cardinals, with their new brain trust, to try to unlock him and become the guy that it looked like he was going to be when he was one of the top prospects in the organization coming up? Like, to me, that's a no-brainer. That's an absolute no-brainer. If it's all the same for him, if Brant Brown and company can't do anything to fix Nolan Gorman, well, then you move on from him and maybe you end up selling low. If that happens, you will not hear criticism of the Cardinals for selling low on Gorman from me. Might hear it from other people. You will not hear it from me. Because I think it is more important with where this organization is at right now to give him, and to a lesser extent Jordan Walker. Walker's a little bit younger, so we talk about them in different ways. But to give those guys the opportunity to become what we thought they were going to be and give the new hires with the Cardinals an opportunity to work with them and see where that goes. So that kind of leaves, all that being said, that kind of leaves third base open. We'll talk more about that coming up in just a moment. We'll continue the Nolan Arenado conversation. If you've got any thoughts, you can text in 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. We are going through the list of the most likely Cardinals to be traded this offseason, courtesy of MLB Trade Rumors. And we will continue on with that Nolan Arenado conversation after the 7 o'clock news. Again, if you want to chime in, 314-436-7900. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Into the second hour of the program, also into the final hour of the show this week. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. If you want to join us, you can text or tweet in. If you tweet and or text in, you can text in at 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900, or tweet at me at Matt Pauley on air. Got a text message. We were talking about Nolan Gorman before we took the break. Text message from the 256 says about Nolan Gorman. With all the time he has been given so far, he has only gone backwards. If he becomes an all-star somewhere else, so be it. But if the Cardinals really are taking next year off, I guess maybe keep him unless he's holding someone back. Says maybe a new coach will have a new approach. The idea of swing hard in case you hit isn't working. I would just remind folks, when he was in the minor leagues before he became a Cardinal and putting up huge numbers at Memphis, the clamoring for him was as much in the last, admittedly, I wasn't here covering the Cardinals, but I was working the division from St. Louis, always followed along with the Cardinals. But I can't think of, and maybe there is one, and I just can't think of it off the top of my head. I can't think of a single player in the last 10 or 15 years who was at AAA who Cardinals fans wanted to see more than Nolan Gorman. It was the social media desire for Gorman to become a Cardinal at that point was insane. And it wasn't per se wrong. I'm fine. We don't need to go back and relitigate that. But just think about what you're saying now about Gorman and compare that to where he was at that point as a young guy, as a prospect who has yet to make his major league debut. You have to give him the opportunity. I think if he does go somewhere else, he's going to thrive. I've seen this before. That doesn't even mean that I'm guaranteeing that the new folks involved with the Cardinals are going to be able to fix him. Maybe a year from now, we are having a discussion about him playing on another team. But if you are going to redo player development and redo the way that you kind of evaluate players and just all the, every organizational philosophy, I'm sure, is being looked at. If you're going to do all this stuff and you've got a guy who profiles out like Nolan Gorman, man, you got to give him every chance in the world. And maybe he doesn't run with it. Maybe he continues to be a sub-200 hitter that strikes out 2.5 times a game. And that just doesn't play at the big league level, obviously, even if he runs into a home run every once in a while. That's not a big league player. I get that. I understand that. So even if it results in just what we've already seen continuing, man, you got to give him every opportunity in the world to take that step forward again. If you're going to believe in the people that you're bringing into the organization, whose job it is to make players better, well, then you don't just walk. This is not the offseason to walk away from Nolan Gorman. It's just not. It just absolutely is not. We'll get a little more about Gorman in a second. We're going through the list from MLB Trade Rumors of the players who are most likely to be traded. And when we broke for the 7 o'clock news, we were talking about Nolan Arenado. He's 10th on the overall list, 3rd Cardinal listed. At this point, it just makes sense. I think the Cardinals still want to dump a little bit of salary, maybe not quite as much as they wanted to a couple weeks ago, but I still think there is salary to dump. Nolan Arenado, of everybody there, maybe from the outside, looks like the guy who is least willing to be on a team that is not competing at a high level. Now, he's got full no trade clause. Where would he go? There's been a lot of teams that have been rumored to have some interest in him. Philadelphia, Boston, even the Yankees. Do they find a way to make it work in Los Angeles? That's where he'd like to go, you would think. You get the sense he'd love to be a Dodger. They've got a guy at third who's pretty good. Do they find something else with Max Muncy and get Arenado over at third? Do they find a way to make that work? I don't know. The financial side of this thing is very messy. He's guaranteed $74 million through 2027. The Rockies are still going to pay $5 million of his contract in 2025. So this year, if he gets traded, he'll get paid by 3 different teams. There's a lot of deferred money on his deal. The deferred money, and I'm not against deferred money, but when you actually see it like written down year by year, it looks crazy. The deferred money on Arenado, his $20 million of his 2021 salary is being deferred from 2022 to 2031. So from 2022 to 2031, he gets an extra $2 million each year. And then $30 million of his salary from 2022 to 2026 is being deferred at $3 million annually each year starting in 2032 and going to 2041. So the Cardinals are set to pay Nolan Arenado up until his age 50 year. His last payment from the Cardinals is scheduled for a $3 million payment on July 1st of 2041 when he's 50 years old. So it's just a very complex, and if you trade him, how much of that deferred money goes along with him where all of a sudden the Cardinals aren't the team that's paying that deferred money anymore? I don't know. That's what, it's just very complicated. Of all the things that could that might happen, working through the financials of trading Nolan Arenado, incredibly, incredibly complicated. All right, number 11 on the list, the 4th player listed for the Cardinals is Sonny Gray. He's guaranteed $65 million through 2026 with a $25 million salary in 2025, $35 million in 2026, and then the team has an option at 2027 at $30 million with a $5 million buyout. Again, this list was put out before the news of the week. I think all indications are that Sonny Gray is going to be back with the Cardinals. This is one of those things where if you're absolutely blown away with an offer where a team is going to give you a really good package of players and pick up all of his salary, then John Mozeliak and company have to listen. But outside of that, I would say that Sonny Gray is going to be a Cardinal next year. And if it's just going terribly poorly for the Cardinals, then maybe you have a conversation at the trade deadline about him. But I don't want to spend too much time on something that just doesn't seem likely to happen. So Sonny Gray on this list, yes. A week ago, we would be talking about this differently than we're talking about now, just based off what Mo had to say at the GM meetings. And that also very much applies to the next name on this list, number 12 overall on the list of 35, number 5 from the Cardinals listed in Wilson Contreras. He's not getting traded. I say that. He and all, like 99% chance he's not getting traded. Another situation where, look, if a team all of a sudden, if there's a crazy injury that happens to somebody training in the offseason and they really need a catcher, they really need a first baseman, and they're willing to give something up big time for Wilson Contreras, then you don't hang up the phone. But right now, and again, Contreras, not indications are that he's not waiving his no trade clause, so it would have to be the perfect team in that as well. But we talked about it earlier in the week, Contreras going over to first base. This list was put together before that news came out. He would probably either not be on the list or be much lower on the list if that news would have come out previously. Next on the list, number 20 overall. This one's interesting. This is one where I think maybe people outside of St. Louis don't have as much of a grasp on it as people inside of St. Louis, and that's Brendan Donovan. I understand why you would put him on this list. Arbitration eligible through 2027, so low salaries, probably be under $4 million this upcoming season. Can play everywhere, can play at a high level everywhere. Profiles as a player that you want on a winning team. You never put it 100% no. I would be so shocked if the Cardinals moved on from Donovan. I would be so shocked if they moved on from him. He is everything they want in a ball player. Last year, when there was so much talk about who was going to fill the leadership void, he was the first player they talked about. The way he plays the game, just everything about him screams St. Louis Cardinal. They love him. And I think they value him more. It's very common for teams to value their own players more than the industry values them. That's why it's sometimes tough to work out deals. I think the Cardinals value Donovan more than any other team in baseball could potentially value him, and that would mean it's going to be tough to move him. Number 21 on the list, we've already had a long conversation about him, so I don't need to spend too much time on it. Nolan Gorman. I think right now, if you trade him, it's a sell low situation. Now, look, you look at the roster, you've got Brendan Donovan, you've got Thomas Ajayi. You've got J.J. Weatherholt on the way. Like, you've got guys. So if all of a sudden Nolan Gorman's not on the roster anymore, you've got guys to play positions that you feel comfortable with. But this is – the Cardinals have traded way too many guys in a sell-low situation. And I'll repeat it one more time. When you are going through a reset like they're going through and they're really believing in the people that they're bringing into the organization and really feel like they are going to be better at making players better, this is not the time to trade them. If it doesn't work this year and you trade them for equivalent of what you got for Dylan Carlson, so be it. I am not going to be critical. This is not the offseason to trade young guys who are underperforming. This is the offseason to make sure that they've got an opportunity to be coached by the new people and to be led by the new people and to be given the resources. And we'll see how much is actually in place come spring training, because a lot of the technology and infrastructure and equipment and everything that's being brought in will be brought in after this upcoming spring training, because that's when they're going to break ground on redoing the spring training facility. But I would assume that from a technology standpoint, it is going to be at least a little bit beefed up for this year's spring training. I'd be shocked if there's not some investments that are made prior to this year's spring training, so you give guys as much of an opportunity as possible to take that step forward. We're going to continue a version of this conversation. We're doing this probably just about every Friday moving forward. There's always a bunch of Cardinals news during the week, and we go through all of it and break it all down with the former host of this show. Now you hear him on the Dave Glover Show. You hear him on the Gas House Gang, which is noon Monday through Friday, replayed at 8 o'clock. So you're going to hear a lot of Kevin Wheeler over the the next 90 minutes or so. He's got the Gas House Gang tonight with Bernie Miklas from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock. But before we get to the Gas House Gang, I've got a conversation with Kevin Wheeler, so that's going to be coming up in just a few moments or so as we go through the payroll implications of what we learned this past week, whether or not they're going to trade Nolan Arenado, where Arenado could get traded to. That's all coming up in just a moment here on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. You know, we did this last Friday, and we've obviously had Kevin Wheeler on the program a lot, former host of Sports
Sorry
Open Line.
Sorry about that.
But I enjoyed last week on Friday bringing him on and just kind of doing a look back at the week that was, because every week for the Cardinals, I think, is going to look a little bit different. And we do bring Kevin Wheeler now from the Dave Glover Show on. Hey, Wheels.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Yeah. And just at the top, in just a little while at 8 o'clock, we're going to have a replay of the Gas House Gang from earlier today. You and Bernie Miklas get into a whole lot of things.
Yeah, we kicked around like potential destinations for Nolan Arenado. Like, there are reports that he's going to be shopped. We knew that. I mean, I think you knew that by what wasn't said in San Antonio at the GM meetings, right? Because we saw the reports that Sonny Gray and Wilson Contreras had said they're in. They want to stay. But we didn't hear that about Nolan, so it kind of led you to believe that he would be, and when you do the math on who goes where, when you move all the pieces around, somebody would have to go. One, he's the one that makes the most sense.
He does.
And by the way, for him too, I don't want to make this out like Nolan bad guy, you know, like Nolan wants out. That's not what I'm saying at all. And I don't think you are, and certainly Bernie wasn't when we talked about it. It just makes sense for him at his age, with what your team needs to do as far as finding places for players to prove themselves. And with Contreras moving to first, it just limits the other options. So somebody, if it's not him, somebody else has to move to make room.
The team that most gets mentioned right now is the Philadelphia Phillies.
That's a good fit.
It's a great fit.
They got to move Bohm, but I think they would.
Yeah. I am curious how willing Arenado would be to go further east.
That's the question.
Yeah.
We don't know what he wants. I know he loves the Dodgers, right? We know he wanted that probably before St. Louis, but the Rockies were like, we're not trading him in our division. But the Dodgers is a more complicated fit. First of all, they have a lot of big contracts. Second of all, they have a third baseman right now in Max Muncy. That's pretty good.
Real good.
Now, he's not great. He's not an elite player, but he's an elite power guy. Gets on base, left-handed bat, and they don't have anywhere else to put him necessarily, because they've already said that they're bringing Mookie Betts back to the infield. At least that's the plan. They have Gavin Lux in that mix, who they could also trade.
I think they trade Lux. I think
probably
his time,
and he's got value.
Yeah,
but if they're trading him, they're getting something good in return.
Right.
It could, maybe it's a pitcher. Who knows? But like, they've got to move a bunch of pieces to make Arenado work for them, and maybe they will. I mean, they're in a window. They just won the World Series. They've got all the money in the world. That shores up their defense at the hot corner. So there's a scenario where you could do it. Right. It just takes a lot of movement. It's a little less for Philly. Right. A little less difficult. I think there's a possibility that makes some sense in Boston, because there's already been some buzz there that they're thinking about moving Devers off third because they don't like his defense there.
Yeah.
So they could move him to first. There's been some buzz they want to trade Tristan Casas, the young power hitting first baseman, because I don't know, there's some miscommunication stuff going on there. There seems to be some personality related things. I don't mean like he's a bad guy, that they just, I think his injuries and things have them maybe thinking about a different direction, but they could also make Devers a DH too, right? They could do things like that. I think the Yankees could be a fit. It's not not a lock, requires some pieces to be moved, but they don't really have a third baseman. They're not keeping Jazz Chisholm there. He's going to move to second base and replace Gleyber Torres. And they're in a position to where they want to win now, but the problem there is they're very right-handed. And if they add another right-handed bat, especially if they lose Soto, I think that messes with their balance. But another team that makes a lot of sense, if Alex Bregman leaves Houston.
Yeah.
Arenado makes so much sense there.
And he's also said that he's willing to move positions.
Yeah. Bregman.
Yeah.
Right, right. So who knows where free agency takes him. So if he leaves, Arenado's a great fit because Houston's trying to win. He keeps them from dropping off defensively because Bregman's a strong defender. So you get an equal trade there, probably maybe a little better with Arenado. But you put Arenado in that ballpark with the short porch in left field, the Crawford boxes, I didn't look, but I bet you he hits 5 to 8 more home runs just from the ballpark being there instead of Busch Stadium.
Yeah, I would, and that's true about a lot of ballparks.
It's true about Bregman. Yeah. It's true about Altuve, right? So, but from a ballpark fit, from a quality of team fit, it's further west. Like, that makes a lot of sense depending on other things.
I think he would be more, I don't know this for sure, but I think he'd be more comfortable going to Houston than going to Boston.
Yeah, yeah, or New York or whatever. And again, you never really know, but there aren't that many teams that fit the proper description, right? Contender that has the money to take at least some of that on. And, you know, who knows what you're going to get in return. I wouldn't get my hopes up. If I'm a Cardinals fan, I wouldn't be thinking you're getting a top 100 prospect. No. Or anything. You're probably not. Not unless you're eating a huge chunk of that money. And I don't think they want to do that. I think they would rather strike a middle balance where they save a lot of that money and get a solid return instead of we'll eat it all and get a better return.
I don't know if you read it the same way I did. And I wasn't in San Antonio at the GM meeting, so all I can do is read quotes.
Yeah, read the
from
words.
John
yeah.
Mozeliak. I'm not there to like hear it. But it feels like his tone about payroll and things like that was just a little bit different at the GM meetings than it was at that press conference at the end of the season in the season also, the video conference they had. It feels like coming out of those two things, I thought, okay, they're going to dump a lot of payroll. And now it almost feels like they're a little bit more comfortable with where they're at right now.
That's what I read too. I thought the same thing. But I think, you know, compare what we know now to what we didn't know then. I mean, you know who you've let go, right? It's at least $60 million worth of commitments from 2024 that are no longer on the books, mm-hmm. right? With Kittredge and Gallegos and Paul Goldschmidt and the two pitchers of Gibson and Lynn. So that's a lot of money that's already off. And I got in reading his quotes, and I saw them in Derek Gould's story, but I think Katie Wu had the story too, where he was basically saying, yeah, you know, moving more would essentially give us a little more flexibility. I'm putting, those aren't his words, that's a paraphrase. But it doesn't sound like that's an imperative at this point, which is a good thing to know.
Yeah.
Because I don't think any of us want straight salary dump. We want baseball moves. And letting all the guys that you've let go, they're salary dumps, but those are also baseball moves.
100%.
Because you got to make room for different players who have higher upsides. Guys that might, or same upside, but much cheaper player, right? Like, that's what you're trying to create. And I took the same thing out of that. I thought that, well, you know, I mean, obviously, we know the TV deal is at least now is a certainty. They've agreed to a deal. So they know what their revenue is. They know where there's some possible growth there. They know that gambling is in. Right.
Also, I mean, a big deal.
Yes. So I think that certainty is probably why you heard a little different tone.
Okay. So their TV deal, according to the Post-Dispatch reporting, is they're taking about a 23% cut.
Right.
From what they were making last year. It's like $17 million.
Yeah.
That sounds like a big number, and it is a big number. Nobody out there. I don't want to walk
in. That's Gallegos and Lynn.
But I don't want to walk in tomorrow and find out that I'm making 25% less than I was.
No, No. So you're right.
I'm not trying to just be completely dismissive that 23% is
now
nothing.
But keep in mind, it's only that of that particular slice of the pie.
Right.
Their national TV money is not going to change. They do have to worry about the attendance piece.
Yeah. But specifically to that, where I'm trying to go with this is, if you went to Milwaukee, if you went to Minnesota and you told them, hey, you can re-up with your TV partner and you're going to take a 23% cut, in our current environment, those teams would be running to sign that deal. Yeah. Their cuts are going to be so much more significant.
Well, Minnesota's were last year, yeah.
Well, just going, I'm talking about the TV money alone.
Right, right. But I mean, that's what I mean. Last year, they already started cutting their payroll.
Because now that they're going to off of Bally and they're going to their own thing,
it's going to be a lot more uncertain.
It's going to be a lot more than 23% that they lose. The Cardinals actually come out of this in a pretty good spot.
Yes, and again, I think that may be the whole reason why we caught a different tone from Mo when talking about payroll, because you didn't take as big a haircut as you could have, and you got the gambling part coming in. I mean, that passed, so you know that's coming in, which is all good for the Cardinals. And again, I don't think payroll this year matters. I don't think anybody here, like if you're a baseball fan, if you're a Cards fan, don't even talk payroll this year. It's not worth it. It's not the point. Now, one thing I would say is if you do happen to find yourself in the fortunate position in July where you're kind of in it, well, go get something.
Right.
Go make your team better, right? Like, this is not a give up, no, oh no, we're riding it out. But they do have to do what Mo talked about in San Antonio, which is you got to ride through some rough times with guys you think can be impact players. You can't keep changing them out because you're hyper concerned with losing every game. Every game you lose. And I get it, man. The last 2 years, they got a slow start. You're panicking. We don't want to. We don't know. They haven't dealt with that. This franchise hasn't lost like that, like they did early 2023, early 2024. They don't usually do that. So I think they handled it poorly. They seem to be acknowledging that. And now this is about giving people some runway to not only prove themselves, but to be able to ride the wave a little bit. Get out of the slump before you go to Memphis.
I would also argue that the first bit of news we got this week are kind of going in reverse, talking through everything. Wilson Contreras going over to first base. I think that makes the lineup better. I think it creates some stability. If the idea is to keep Contreras healthy and keep his bat in the lineup every day. And if that happens, if that works, and this isn't a guy moving from second to third, this is a guy moving from a position that takes a heavy toll on your body, as you know as well as anybody wills, to a spot that takes, not that it takes none, but it takes a whole lot less. If the gamble on keeping him healthy works, this is a move that makes the team so much better offensively.
I love it because for a couple of reasons. One, because you're creating opportunity for younger players in Pajes and Herrera, who both have upside, right? And they showed that. You know, Pajes much more defensively, Herrera more with the bat, but the combination of the two of them could be really nice. Mm-hmm. When you add it up at the end of the year, you might have a really nice combo there, and you got to find out, right? You're not going to find out if Contreras is catching. You're just not. But the other part of it is, like, as a catcher, let's say you stay healthy. Let's say Contreras is a healthy catcher. He's going to play 120 games. That's 42 games you're not going to have one of your best bats because you have to rest catchers. Nobody catches 150 games anymore.
No.
You can argue whether the guys in the old days used to or not. Yeah, and they used to throw 300 innings too. Nobody's doing that. We understand you perform better when you get more rest. And at that position, you need the recovery time. At first base, he could go play 150 games. That's 30 more games you'll have that bat in the middle of your lineup, forgetting injuries, right? And obviously, you take into the fact that you're less likely to get hurt at first than you are a catcher. And think, I've said this, people, I'm sorry if there are any first basemen listening that are going to take this as an insult, but it's not meant that way. But if you can catch, you can play first base.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that anybody can play first base. It's not that easy. But I'm saying that the guy that usually is 60 feet, 6 inches away from a pitcher, scooping balls in the dirt, blocking pitches in the dirt, throwing runners out in 2.0 seconds or less, that guy has the reflexes, the footwork, and the willingness to get down and dirty on the balls in the dirt to play first base.
Yeah, the one thing.
And the hands. That's a key thing, the hands.
There's the mental part of it. You know, when there's that ball that's in the hole between first and second, the first baseman's got to make the decision on whether they pursue or whether they go back to the first base bag and stuff like that.
You'll notice some mistakes on that. Yeah.
And that just takes
But Wilson's
time.
A good athlete, though. He's not your typical catcher.
No.
He moves better than your typical catcher.
100% on that. There's been a lot of people putting down the defense of Pajes and Herrera. For Pajes, it's about the throwing. For Herrera, it's about everything.
His blocking was good.
Okay. I think this is one of those things, though, where people only watch the Cardinals and don't watch the rest of baseball because really across baseball, not a lot of guys were getting. Now, the Cardinals weren't a very good base running team, so maybe you saw the Cardinals get thrown out a little bit more. But I'm not telling you that Ivan Herrera and Pedro Pajes are good throwing runners out.
I'll tell you that Pajes can throw. Okay. He'll throw runners out. I'm convinced of it.
Yeah, I'm not. My point is
Herrera needs a lot of work.
I'm not worried about it. I'm not worried about that part of it.
Yeah.
Like, that's not the reason not to do this.
No, I agree with that. But also, here you go, former catcher speaking here. A lot of what I saw last year was on the pitchers.
100%.
A lot of it was on the pitchers. And it always is a combo. Now, with Herrera, it was a lot more on him. It just was. I mean, when you look at all the measurables, you look at his arm strength, you look at his exchange time, his overall pop time, he did not do well. Those are him problems.
Which would be nice if they had a catching instructor to help him with
that. Thank you. I'm available. And Pajes, though, was better in those things. He does have above average arm strength. His pop time wasn't that bad on average, right? He probably needs to be more consistent. Both of them need to be more consistent with their ball placement. And we talk about that with quarterbacks, right? Mm-hmm. Good ball placement. That's huge for catchers.
Absolutely.
You got a little bit of a window there. It's got to be below the knees. Ideally off the ground, but if it bounces, it bounces. But you really want it in that like 6 to 8 inch space between second and first. You actually want it in the base pass so that it can be a catch and tag at the same time. And I noticed that with Herrera, ball placement's bad. He throws a lot of balls high, things like that. Whatever his problems are, I think, are fixable. And I think with Pajes, it's just too small a sample size. He didn't play that many games. What does that look like over 100 games when you get into a groove and you're playing every day or you're playing 4 days a week over the course of 3 or 4 months? I think that you look at him, he moves right, he's got the arm strength. I think he's going to be okay in that regard, but they got a lot of work to do with Herrera there.
That's Kevin Wheeler. We're going to hear a lot more of him coming up at 8 o'clock. He and Bernie Miklas have the Gas House Gang, which you can watch live at 12 noon, Monday through Friday, on all the KMOX Sports social media channels. It's podcasted as well. So we'll be hearing more from you coming up in just a while.
I'm sorry, everybody.
That's good. That's good. You have
There's a lot of Bernie, too, so just keep that in mind.
You've got presence today on, what, four straight shows on KMOX, from DGS to TIPM to here. To Gas House Gang. So
yeah.
Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, buddy. See ya.
That's Kevin Wheeler. I'm Matt Pauly. This is Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Back in on a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We are done at 8 o'clock. So coming up at the top of the hour, it is the Gas House Gang that is going to feature today Kevin Wheeler and Bernie Miklas. If you're not familiar with it, it is a show that goes live at 12 noon every day. Not here over the air on KMOX, but on the KMOX Sports social media channels. Between myself, Kevin, Bernie, and Tom Ackerman, two of the four of us are together Tuesday through Friday, and then all four of us are together on Cardinals Mondays. And it's mostly Cardinals talk, but we certainly get into a few other things as well, including the St. Louis Blues. Let's talk about the Blues. Yesterday, not great. Not a good effort for them. They lose at home to the Utah Hockey Club by a 4-2 score. Just not kind of the effort that they're looking for. And as they got onto the practice ice today, and really towards the end of the game yesterday, we saw some things starting to change for the Blues, because Pavel Buchnevich, who has been their second-line center, well, he was moved back to his natural spot of being on the wing. So he was on the top line with Braden Schenn and Jordan Kyrou. That means Dylan Holloway is going to move up into that second line center spot. And there just continues to be lineup changes. There's not been a whole lot of consistency, both because of injury and because of just not performing where the team wants guys to be performing. We continue to see different lines and different defensive pairings almost on an every game basis. After practice today, Drew Bannister did spend some time talking to the media, and he went into the decision-making process and what it means on moving Buchnevich to the wing.
You know, yesterday I thought when we did it in the third period, we had, you know, they started to get a little bit of traction, and obviously they scored the one goal. So, again, you know, yesterday was not a good game for us, so we have to make some changes, and that was one of the changes that we felt we'd make, whether we stick with it. But as of tomorrow, we want to try something different.
What was kind of Buchnevich's feedback on how he felt about playing center, or how he felt about playing wing? What was the input that he would have?
He likes playing center. You know, he likes the opportunity, and he's doing everything in his power to learn the position. And I think, you know, the defensive part of the game comes very easily for Bucci, and he's been really good and committed to that. The faceoff part, he's been working at. He's finding himself chasing a lot of pucks, but it's not because he isn't trying at it. He's been working at it. You know, there certainly you're not going to get. I think the offensive side is something where, you know, he's trying to find himself a little bit and playing the center ice and getting the opportunities and the touches he needs to feel involved in the game. And I think that was, you know, that's probably, you know, where he's, you know, kind of searching for his game a little bit, is through the middle on the offensive side.
The face-off part of it, is that just all about the repetition, or is there more to it than that?
I think it's repetition. It's you're going up against centermen that have been doing that for their whole life. But obviously, you know, I think, you know, when you have somebody that hasn't taken a lot of draws, I think it's incumbent on the wingers to help out a little bit more, the communication of what you're trying to do. You know, if you are going to tie up a draw, create more 50-50s and help out on the edge battles instead of losing, you know, draws clean.
Continuing on that conversation about Buchnevich, Bannister was asked, and he talked a little bit on the how Buchnevich is feeling about this, if this is an indictment on him and the way he's playing, and if he's eventually going to go back to center or not. He certainly, Bannister did talk through all those things.
He does put a lot of pressure on himself, especially offensively, but, you know, defensively, I think he's played very well for us. He saw a lot of tough matchups, you know, playing against other teams' top lines. You know, he's done a real good job, but I think the frustration leads for him. He wants to, you know, contribute offensively all the time, too, so he puts a lot of pressure on himself that way.
Do you still want to try him at center in the future? Or
yeah, like we're like I said, like tomorrow's just a game, and you know we'll move forward as we see fit. And right now, we're just going to play him on the wing for a game. But I still think you know he can be a real good centerman for us.
I mentioned a moment ago. It's not every game, but it seems like every game there have been changes. Guys come in and out of the lineup, and that happens. That's very few teams just keep their lineups all the way the same. And, you know, third and fourth lines, they change up. That final defensive pairing, you'll move guys in and out. That's normal. But what's not normal is just the amount of change we've seen this year with the Blues. They are still searching for a kind of a core group and core group of lines that's going to be able to work. And Bannister went through that on why they are continuing to make changes.
Right now, it's not working. So we can't stick with the same thing. You know, and, you know, whether it's our net front or our flankers or our guys up top, like we're searching for answers and trying to find combinations in the right spot for right now with the players that we have to have success.
At the end of the day, you got to score more goals, and they're not scoring on the power play. They're not scoring when they're at even strength. It's just not happening. Now, at times this year, it has felt like they've gotten shots and they've created scoring opportunities. The puck just isn't going into the net. At other times, it feels like they're not creating scoring chances, and that's kind of where they are at right now, specifically off that game against Utah yesterday.
I mean, obviously yesterday, I think the shot total was indicative of our game as a whole and our lack of forechecking and our lack of pressure that we had on. When you look at the chances, I think in the first period, we probably created, you know, seven chances, and then it went, you know, in the second and the third, we didn't create a lot of chances that we'd like to see, but you know, last night was a game that certainly overall was off for us. So, you know, when you're not forechecking, when you're not playing the right way, you're not going to get rewarded offensively.
That is Drew Bannister, the Blues head coach, speaking earlier today at practice. The Blues are back at tomorrow evening when they match up against the Washington Capitals. We'll take one more break. We'll come back and we will wrap up this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
We are starting to wrap up this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. It is a Friday night tradition. Actually, we've got a really cool next couple hours for you. For the next hour, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, it'll be the Gas House Gang as Kevin Wheeler and Bernie Miklas will be with you. And then at 9 o'clock, it's the Rachel Zimmerman Show. So the Dave Glover Show is well represented over the next couple hours between Kevin and Rachel. We've already had Kevin on the show. Now let's bring Rachel Zimmerman on, who again is going to be on tonight at 9 o'clock. Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Matt. How cool is it to be a part of the Gas House Gang, by the way?
It's so much fun.
I bet.
Yesterday, Thursday, we did, it was just me and Bernie, and literally we did 40 minutes on all aspects of Wilson Contreras moving to first base. And it's the, yes, you can do 40 minutes on that single topic, and it's the kind of geeky baseball conversation that I really enjoy.
I love that.
Yeah. So, what do you have coming up on the show tonight?
I have a fun show. I have Steve Ewing from The Urge. Mm-hmm. He stopped by the studio earlier this week for a nice little interview. They have a show coming up at the Pageant on November 29th, and they always do it up big. They're really doing it up big this year. So we talk about that, talk about Steve's hot dogs, because he obviously has that going on. I'm also going to talk to Kelly Jackson, who I talked to on election night. I'm replaying that, basically, talking about like political memes and just internet culture in the political season. So that's a fun interview. So yeah, it's going to be a good one. I hope everybody tunes in.
It's been an interesting week for you. You've done, obviously, Dave Glover Show, and you guys did a lot of politics on that. You were involved in KMOX's election night coverage on Tuesday. You're doing this. What as you look back on election 2024 and everything that went along with it and kind of what you've done from an on-air perspective, what stands out about this week?
Oh, wow. That's funny. I was just telling Sue Thomas from KFDK earlier today, it feels like this week has been like 3 weeks in one. Mm-hmm. Like it just feels like so much has happened. I'm really relieved it's over. The thing that really stands out to me is I was surprised that we knew the election results the day after. I really thought it was going to be like 4 or 5 days. To me, that was a relief that we could just kind of be like, okay, this is what's going on. We can move on now. Everyone can choose how they're going to react to this information, but at least it's not hanging over our heads anymore. So I was very happy that it wasn't like days and days of uncertainty.
And for people who stayed up, I think Trump talked like 2 o'clock.
Yeah, 1:30, 2 or 3 o'clock.
Yeah, so
yeah.
I stayed up watching. So I went to bed that night knowing
what was
president.
Going on.
I know your focus was on kind of younger people and talking to them. It was looking at the numbers, and obviously we know who got elected and we know a lot of demographics that went along with that. But man, oh man, oh man, it really seemed like people who were born in the 80s and 90s really turned on this election. I mean, you can make the argument that a lot of different demographics made the difference, mm-hmm. but you can make the argument that people kind of in our age group born in the 80s and 90s have a really large impact on who this next president is going to be.
Absolutely. You know, millennials are a huge generation. We're like as big as the baby boomers were. Gen X is a little smaller. Gen Z is a little smaller. So I think that's going to be a trend you're going to see in elections to come, too, is like our age group is going to have a huge say because there's so many of us.
Yeah, it certainly is interesting. So we'll be listening tonight. Great job this week. And
thanks,
go
Matt.
Enjoy yourself a weekend and a couple days away from it all.
Thank you so much.
That's Rachel Zimmerman. She's got the Rachel Zimmerman Show tonight, 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock. You can also podcast it wherever you get your podcast. Just do a search for it. And that's going to do it for this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line. Again, we've got the Gas House Gang with Kevin Wheeler and Bernie Miklas. That's on the way next right here on KMOX.